Exactly. So!
Who the devil are you?
Don't panic. Just come up with a good story.
My name is Mr. Burns.
Excellent.
Ha ha! New year, new season. Who dis? It me. And oh, how I've missed you. Howdily doodly, sweet listeners, and welcome back to Hello, Mr. Burns, your favourite podcast about The Simpsons that might help you win pub trivia. My name is Perry, and we are at the beginning of Season 2 of The Simpsons. I'm coming to you post-COVID, post-2022, and I am ready to get up to my elbows in The Simpsons. You might also notice that my voice is a little bit, I like to think I've got a jazz voice now. It's a little bit deeper, a little bit huskier. This is what it sounds like when you have long COVID, and so there you go. Enjoy my jazz voice on this podcast. How nice is that? Also, let me just say that I know that the break was much longer than I anticipated, but Christmas and New Year's feel like they were just last week. What even is time? Anyway, so today's episode is a good one. I mean, they all are, but this one is especially good. For some unknown reason, I have watched this episode maybe 40 times. Perhaps it was the one episode that was cheaper to run for Sunday morning cartoons. I'm not sure, but it was always on repeat. So this is the opener for Season 2. This episode is called Bart Gets an F. Today we're going to be talking about the absolute queen of the silver screen and my personal mentor through life as a single something gal about town, Edna Krabappel. We're also going to cover the Guillotine and Living Heads, which kind of sounds like a band. And lastly, the steampunk space opera science fiction children's movie, Treasure Planet. Woohoo, it's a good one. All right, before we get into the fun stuff, let's just do our episode synopsis so you know what we're going to be talking about today. So this is Season 2, Episode 1, Bart Gets an F. Bart has to give a presentation to the class about the book Treasure Island, despite never reading it.
Is this a book report or a witch hunt?
Then perhaps you'd like to tell us the name of the pirate.
Blackbeard. Captain Nemo.
Captain Hook.
Long John Silver.
Big Pete.
Bluebeard.
Bluebeard?
Sit down, Bart. I'll see you after class.
Mrs. Krabappel warns him that his grades have gotten steadily worse since the beginning of the term, and if he doesn't shape up, he's going to have to repeat the grade. We see Bart trying to study, procrastinating, and then failing test after test. He does try to get some help from Sherry and Terry, who give him false info. He tries getting tutoring from Martin, but Martin gets excited about hanging out with the cool kids and abandons him. He even tries copying Milhouse's test, but fails because...
Why, this test is worse than Milhouse's exam. Bart Simpson, I warned you, this is the final straw.
The night before the big last test, Bart is sitting next to his bed praying to God that something will happen that will make him miss school the next day so he can have more time to study. That night, it's a Christmas miracle, even though it's not around Christmas. It snows and all the schools are closed the next morning and Bart heads up to his room to study. He has this weird, odd hallucination where he's witnessing the signing of the Declaration of Independence. Anyway, back to school. So on the final test, he tries his hardest, but he fails again. Blubbering, crying, and just absolutely distraught, he tells Mrs. Krabappel.
No, what's the matter? Well, I would think you'd be used to failing by now.
No, you don't understand. I really tried this time. I mean, I really tried.
There, there.
This is as good as I can do, and I still failed.
Well, a 59, it's a high F.
Who am I kidding? I really am a failure. Oh, now I know how George Washington felt when he surrendered Fort Necessity to the French in 1754.
What?
Oh, you know 1754, the famous defeat of the French.
My God, Bart, you're right.
So?
You just demonstrated applied knowledge. And due to the difficulty and relative obscurity of the reference, you deserve an extra point on your exam. Hey, it's only fair.
You mean I... pass?
Just barely.
I passed! I got a D minus! I passed! All right! I passed!
Bart triumphantly kisses her on the cheek and runs outside the school. At home, Homer proudly hangs a test on the fridge, and Bart states, "Part of this D belongs to God." Teehee. The end. So, notable appearances. The sailboat painting that's above the Simpsons couch makes its debut appearance, along with Mayor Quimby and the new opening sequence that we all know and love. In really gross news from the internet, Lots of websites pointed out that this is the first time we see Bart kiss someone, which is a little bit creepy that that's notable. But anyway, on to learning. And I thought we would begin with my absolute favorite queen, the single queen of Springfield, and my personal hero, Mrs. Krabappel.
I know. Another year together. Oh, it's going to be hell.
Poor Edna. So, Edna Krabappel, what do we know about her? The most recurring theme about Edna is her non-existent love life. And as a result, her loneliness and desire for a partner. Oh, girl, I feel you. She is divorced. Her first husband ran off with their marriage counselor. She does talk about her ex living somewhere else exotic. But at one time, a man at the local gas station, while diagnosing a fault with her car, tastes sugar in the gasoline tank and states, "Your ex-husband strikes again." Just as a side note, I think it's a bit weird to taste petrol from someone else's tank, but I don't know. I'm not a mechanic. Maybe it's a thing. So while perpetually single, Edna never lets anything get in her way of finding love. We see her date Principal Skinner, Ned Flanders, and she kind of dates Bart when he pretends to be a man named Woodrow. We also see her at one point making out with Jacques, the baguette bowling instructor from season one. If we skip ahead to episode 11 of this season, we will see one of the most graphic sex scenes I've ever seen in The Simpsons, and it's between Edna Krabappel and a sushi chef. So stay tuned for that one. I'll have the audio for you at episode 11, and whew, it's a lot. I do love the line from episode 16, season 8, where you get the feeling that she is a very high-value lady in society.
That's Sideshow Bob!
Oh, well, that's the last time I announced my dinner plans in class.
That was Edna Krabappel. You only get one chance with Edna Krabappel. I hope you're happy.
I also love that she tells her students her dating plans, because I would too. Why not? Anyway, on to her name. So, Krabappel. Just as a side note, if you do go to any Simpsons pub trivia quizzes, usually they will throw out the question, can you spell Edna Krabappel? And it's actually tricky. So K-R-A-B-A-P-P-E-L. I always get it wrong. I try to write it on my hand before the pub quiz and I always forget to. So Krabappel was supposed to be a play on the name Crabapple. And a running joke was going to be that the kids never got it right. And this kind of didn't work in later seasons and later episodes, so they decided to scrap it completely.
Bart's teacher is named Krabappel? I've been calling her Crandall. Why didn't someone tell me? Oh, I've been making an idiot out of myself.
It's actually a throwback to the teacher, Miss Crabtree, from the 1930s Little Rascals series. Anyway, onto her name. So depending on what language you're watching The Simpsons in, they always have like a little joke about Krabappel and it having different meanings. And word of warning, I'm about to butcher a couple of beautiful languages. So just listen to my pronunciation. You ready? So in France, Edna Krabappel was called Krabappel. Kra sounds like krakra, which is used by young children to describe something dirty. And babel, of course, means not pretty. In Italy, she was called Edna Krabappel. Capra in Italian means goat. So her name is Goat Lady. In Spain, her name was pronounced Edna Krabappel, which means paper face. In this episode, we see the kids watching an episode of Itchy and Scratchy called Let Them Eat Scratchy, which of course is a reference to the famous Let Them Eat Cake. So while this phrase is often associated with Marie Antoinette, this phrase has been dated back to before the French Revolution, possibly the 17th or 18th century. So the quote itself is taken to reflect either the princess's frivolous disregard for the starving peasants or kind of like her poor understanding of the plight. If you do want to watch a fun movie about Marie Antoinette, which has some of the most incredible costumes I've ever witnessed, you have to watch Sofia Coppola's 2006 film Marie Antoinette. It's great. Anyway, so I don't mean to shock you, dear listeners, but my French is not perfect. I know. I'm comfortable enough with myself to admit that. But from all my sources, the original phrase, let them eat cake, does not mention cake when you say it in French. It actually says brioche. Let them eat brioche. If you really want to liven up a party, be sure to turn off the music and explain that to everyone. A similar phrase in history can be found in the Book of Jin, a 7th century chronicle of the Chinese Jin dynasty. So it reports that one of the emperors of Western Jin was told that his people were starving because there was no rice, and he reportedly said, "Why don't they just eat porridge with ground meat? Good question, Emperor. Why don't they?" Anyway, so back to the gruesome stuff. So in The Simpsons, we do see Scratchy getting his head lopped off with a guillotine. By the way, you should see my script because I have absolutely no clue how to spell guillotine. And it's to the point where my spell checker has quite literally just given up. So halfway through the document, it just kind of like throws in the towel and it's like, you know what? You figure it out. So the guillotine, or if you went to any school in Australia, the guillotine, is an apparatus designed for efficiently carrying out executions by beheading. It was made popular during the French Revolution. Basically, what happens is the condemned person is secured with stocks at the bottom of a frame, and they position their neck directly below a giant angled blade. The blade is then released, and it just kind of chops the person's head off with a single clean pass so the head falls into a basket below. The guillotine has really cute little nicknames in France. So it's known as the National Razor, the Paper Trimmer, and the Capet's Necktie. So Capet, or Capet, was a nickname given to Louis XVI, Marie Antoinette's hubby. Remember that they got the paper trimmer treatment during the revolution. It's cute, right? The guillotine, of course, was invented with the intention of making capital punishment less brutal and less horrific. The guillotine remained in fashion in France until 1981. In fact, the last person to be executed in France was a man named Hamida Janbouji, who was guillotined on the 10th of September, 1977. 1977! Do you know what else happened that year? Fleetwood Mac released their 11th studio album, Rumours. Apple Computer shipped its first Apple II computer. And Chris Martin, Shakira, and Kanye West were all born. Insane, I tell you. Let's just have a quick look at Hamida Janbouji, and I'm so absolutely butchering his name, but it's okay, because he did. So he was an immigrant living in Marseille, and he was executed for the torture slaying of his girlfriend. He was working as a pimp, and he killed her in revenge after she reported to the authorities that he had tried to force her into prostitution. So what I found really interesting about his case was his execution. So the guillotine, of course, like all other methods of execution are, was under intense criticism, and his death actually drew more fire when a doctor in attendance testified that Janbouji remained responsive for up to 30 seconds after decapitation. It was not the first time that the condemned appeared to remain conscious for an uncomfortably long period of time before finally oozing away. Henri Languy, who was guillotined in 1905, reportedly looked at a witness who called out his name after being decapitated. This bit really creeped me out, so I tracked down the report from this. So the following report was written by Dr. Béraud, who observed the head of the executed prisoner, Languy. This was in 1905, June 28th. I called out in a strong, sharp voice, "Languy." I saw the eyelids slowly lift up. I insist advisedly on this peculiarity, but with an even movement, quite distinct and normal, such as happens in everyday life with people awakened or torn from their thoughts. Next, Languy's eyes very definitely fixed themselves on mine, and the pupils focused themselves. I was then not dealing with the sort of vague, dull look without any expression that can be observed any day in dying people to whom one speaks. I was dealing with undeniably living eyes which were looking at mine. After several seconds, the eyelids closed again. It was at that point that I called out again, and once more, without any spasms, slowly, the eyelids lifted, and undeniably, living eyes fixed themselves on mine, perhaps with even more penetration than the first time. There was a further closing of the eyelids, but now less complete. I attempted the effect of a third call. There was no further movement, and the eyes took on the glazed look for which they have been in the dead. Isn't that spooky? And also, just as a side note, God, people had a way with words. Like, can you imagine if that report had been written today? Alrighty, Roo. So as a nice palate cleanser, I thought we'd switch over to Treasure Island.
There she blows, the catch of the day.
So Treasure Island, originally titled The Sea Cook, A Story for Boys, is an adventure novel by Scottish author Robert Louis Stevenson, and it tells the story of buccaneers and buried gold. Side note, whenever I say that, buccaneers and buried gold, it makes me think of a line from the live-action Casper movie with Christina Ricci. So it's considered a coming-of-age story, and it's noted for its atmosphere, characters, and action scenes. It's actually where we get the stereotypical pirate character and story from. It's where we get the idea of deserted tropical islands, treasure maps marked with an X, and one-legged pirates with parrots perched on their shoulders.
Arr!
In case you didn't know, pirates wore a patch over one eye not because they'd lost an eye in battle, but because it allows them to prepare one eye to see in the dark. So when they go below deck, they could swap the eye patch from one eye to the other and see with the eye that's already adjusted to low light conditions. You can actually do this at home. So if you have to get up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom, keep one eye shut and then see what happens when you get back into your bedroom afterwards and all the lights are off. It's really cool. So I genuinely thought that I'd read Treasure Island, but in my research, I realized that I had not read Treasure Island. I'd actually just watched the movie Treasure Planet, the awesome and slightly terrifying 2002 sci-fi Disney adaptation of the book. I'm not wild on Treasure Island as a book, but Treasure Planet does not get enough credit in all houses. If you do want to categorize this film, it's a steampunk space opera science fiction movie, which is basically just listing all of my favorite genres. The lead character, Jim Hawkins, is voiced by Joseph Gordon-Levitt. You also have Dame Emma Thompson as Captain Amelia Smollett. So she's like an anthropomorphic cat. David Hyde Pierce plays the bumbling character, Dr. Doctor. He's best known for his work on Frasier, and he also voices the character of Cecil Terwilliger, who is Sideshow Bob's brother. Also, rewatching the film, the character of John Silver, Long John Silver, if you like, is a cyborg. He's lost his leg, his arm, and his eye in pursuit of Treasure Planet. So his cyborg's eye gives him several optic visionary functions. You know, he can zoom in, he's got night vision, all the cool stuff. It's very Mad Eye Moody, or if you're into Sin City, you might recognize that whole gold eye cyborg thing. So Treasure Planet took roughly 4.5 years to create, although it was originally pitched in 1985. So the big problem was that it was released the same year as Lilo and Stitch and Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers and The Chamber of Secrets. So it really just got squashed into the corner. In true Disney Universe loop, a stuffed toy of Stitch can be seen in the corner of Jim Hawkins' room at the start of the movie. Before I get completely lost on sci-fi and cinematic choices, just wanted to say that the opening of this movie is this fantastic free-falling scene where Jim Hawkins is like zooming around through the clouds. It's really great. Jim Hawkins also kind of looks like Nick Kyrgios. So you can watch this film on Disney Plus, as well as Atlantis: The Lost Empire, which is another great movie and has one of the most horrific opening scenes with the Ulysses sinking. Oof. And on that wonderful note, we come to the end of the first episode of season 2 of Hello, Mr. Burns.
Kiss the teacher!
And boy, oh boy, have we had some fun. So we have learned about space pirates, Marie Antoinette and Brioche, and Edna Kay, who, if I am to understand TikTok correctly, is the queen we stan. Oof. I have to say that it is so good to be back with you all. Next episode, we'll be covering Simpson and Delilah. And if anyone wants to use my Disney Plus account, send me a DM on Instagram, because screw Disney, the less money we give them, the better. My name is Perry. Thank you so much for listening.
And so concludes our tale. Good night. And keep watching the skies. Skies.